Hello, I'm Sheila Dillon, and welcome to this BBC download of the Food Programme. For information on the BBC's terms and conditions of use, visit www.bbc.co.uk/radio4. And now, enjoy the podcast. This is a programme about sugar and the future, not just any sugar. A radical, world-changing kind of sugar produced by a maverick.
It hurts because I have to go against everybody. I have to explain a lot. Nobody understands me. I'm feeling very alone.
We rarely get to hear the voices of the people producing the world's big commodity foods. But Leontino Balbo is one of them. His plantation in southern Brazil produces 6 million tons of sugar every year. But it's the way he's producing that sugar that's the real story here, and is the story we'll be telling in a moment. Leontino's story matters because whatever we think of the trend, the world is getting sweeter. Latest figures from the US Department of Agriculture show that the global consumption of sugar is at an all-time high. This year, more sugar is being harvested than ever before, and that's likely to make it even cheaper and more tempting. But meeting the demand comes at a heavy price. Behind that rise in sugar production is the obliteration of grasslands to grow sugarcane, massive water use, and dangerous harvest work. And all of these problems are distilled in the country that's the world's biggest producer, Brazil. Brazil loves sugar. The national drink is cachaça, distilled from sugarcane. Brazilians also love to drink raw sugarcane juice. Even the winning samba song at the Rio Carnival has been an ode to Brazil's history with sugar. Thousands of dancers cavorted through the streets dressed as green sugar canes, as sugar cubes, as sugared creations. It's a celebration of Brazil's dominance of the world's sweet tooth. But out of this $36 billion industry steps a figure who's almost become a sugar celebrity. A man who, as a student, wanted to change not just the way sugar is produced, but the world. It's a story not widely known outside Brazil, but one that's going to be important for our future. The journalist who's been following this story is David Baker from Wired magazine.
I almost didn't make it into the car. For a Brazilian, Leontino Balbo Jr. is incredibly punctual. He was there on the dot of 7:30 to pick me up from my hotel, and I hadn't quite finished my breakfast. But here we are, on the way to see a project that's become his life's passion.
Look the amount of birds, see? It's more than enough for us. See? Top predators, small birds.
Leontino is 53, but he looks a lot younger. He's got thick, dark hair, which he's quick to say isn't dyed, and he works out for an hour or so every morning, and he even limits his alcohol intake to exactly 220 millilitres a week.
We prefer not to deal with alcoholic drinks.
We're in the middle of São Paulo State, in the south of Brazil, and this is sugar country, and Leontino Balbo comes from a long line of sugar men. His family came here as immigrants from Italy back in 1903, and they worked in the fields replacing the jobs that previously had been done by slaves. And what they did was they put their money aside, worked hard, bought land, and by 1946 had actually established a mill of their own. And now they're big, rich landowners in the area. They have three mills, and they produce more than 6 million tons of sugar every year. And it's through one of their fields that we're driving right now.
And inside we have wolves and falcons and hawks, you know?
Leontino is the second of four brothers, and he had a childhood that you and I could only dream of. I mean, his playground was these forests, these fields, these jungles all around us. In fact, he says he was like a little Mowgli who'd come home from school each day and head straight off into the jungle to play.
And I used to take my bike just using trunks, and I used to go all around the farms alone, 8 years old, and I used to have a fishing rod, and I used to go in lakes where I used to stay inside the water holding the fishing rod in one hand and a rock in the other hand to put away the alligator who wanted to eat my fish, you know, the fish I caught, you know.
We've pulled into one of the sugar fields. All around, all you can see is green, lush green. The cane's a little bit taller than us, and it's blowing slightly in the breeze. And nearby, there's a small area where rows of cane have just been cut.
Let's go and have a look at the soil if we can. You can see the richness of it, the redness of it.
You see the life? Yeah.
Teeming with insects, this soil.
See?
There's a worm, an earthworm, just curled up there.
Yeah. Spider. See the spider? In fact, it's amazing. It's surprising.
In 1980, when he was 20, Leontino went to study agronomy at São Paulo State University. Like loads of students, he wanted to go out and change the world. But on graduation day, he was stunned when he asked his classmates what they were all going to do next. And they said they were going to go and work for the chemical companies selling pesticides.
It was a very frustrating period for me. They should be promoting the life in the ecosystem instead of intensifying.
Right about that time, big changes were going on in Brazil. 20 years of dictatorship was ending, the economy was opening up, the country was reaping big rewards from industrialization. But Leontino, the Mowgli child, couldn't bring himself to be part of all of this. Instead, he wanted to find a way to produce sugar on his family's farm that would work alongside nature, a kind of super organic way of farming. He wanted to bring back more plants and animals to the land, while at the same time keeping the family business afloat. Leontino Balbo comes from a family of rich landowners, and it would have been easy for him just to go home and follow in his father's footsteps and keep things as they were. But that wasn't what he wanted to do. Instead, he gave this presentation to his father and his uncles using charts and statistics to try and persuade them to let him try something new. He persuaded them to give him a plot of land on the family plantation in which he could run some experiments, and the deal would be that the rest of the business would help subsidize his project in its early stages. At the heart of his project was a simple idea: to take the soil in his sugarcane fields back to the state of the soil in the forest. Everything else, plant yields, biodiversity, pest control, would come from there. And what he felt was that soil on farms had become just a container for chemicals with no life of its own, and he wanted it to become a living thing like it was in the forest. First to go was the practice of crop burning. This is how sugarcane is usually harvested. The cane is set on fire to burn off the leaves and makes them easier to cut. The problem is, it's dangerous.
Come on, kids, back here, it's going to get very hot.
And blobs of sugar fall on the ground and get mixed up with the soil. And just washing these uses loads of water. Leontino was using 3 million liters of water every hour just to do this. So instead, he invented a new kind of mechanical harvester which would cut the cane with its leaves still on. And this would then throw the leaves back onto the ground as mulch.
So, Leontino, what are we seeing here in the field?
Here we are seeing the green cane harvesting made by a mechanical machine. These machines, they separate the leaves from the industrializable part, and it was developed here at the mill in the 80s.
And it's picking up the canes from the front and then separating the leaves from the stalks, is that right?
Yes, this is very important because every year after we harvest the fields, we have left 20 tons of trash, which will protect the soil against the sun, the rain, and then will feed the wildlife. Since the bacteria, the microfauna, until the vertebrates, like the wolf and the birds.
Leontino also had a problem with the heavy machinery you find on a farm. Basically, it was compressing his soil. So what he did was he designed special tyres which he could let down before he drove them into the fields. And of course, the toughest thing was to do all of this and still produce enough sugar.
If you would have lower yield, nobody would be interested.
Even though Leontino believed in what he was doing, to convince anyone else, he needed some outside verification. So he invited some scientists from Corpusuca, which is the world's largest sugar company, to come and see what he was up to. The outcome was a disaster. Test after test showed that the project wasn't working. As far as the outside world was concerned, his experiment was a failure. And that hit Leontino hard.
It hurts, because I have to go against everybody. I have to explain a lot. Nobody understands me. I'm feeling very alone. I'm very, very lonely. Probably the loneliest person in the world, because nobody can understand me, you know? And people used to do jokes about me in seminars. One time I went to the bathroom, and then two guys entering the bathroom, they didn't know I was there, and, oh, that guy, he's crazy, he doesn't know what he's saying, everybody laughing, and so on. But I was very convinced, you know, that I was doing the right thing.
On one of my visits to Leontino, he took me into one of the forests which are dotted around his fields. This is where he would always come in times of trouble. And back then, in 1996, when the scientists had delivered these terrible results, he came here to get comfort from these trees.
When I came to the forest, you know, to ask help to these masters, these big trees and so on, and to stay quiet and to hear the voices of the nature, you know. I didn't know they exist at all, you know. And after three or four times after I came here, I started hearing what I call voice of nature, which in fact is my inner voice. And this environment just helped to connect myself with myself, you know. And when I found myself, I started hearing my inner voice, and I started being confident. And then suddenly, from one single instant to another, I knew what we do. I just knew that I should go ahead, that everything would be okay, that I should go ahead. I was 100% positive. I never trembled. I never had one doubt, because there was a strong voice in my mind. You are in the right way. Do it. Do it. This is important. You are doing a very important thing.
He went straight back to the fields, desperate to find something the scientists had missed. And he did find something. A fungus growing amongst the leaves on the ground, a sign that life had returned to the soil. And that was just the start.
I realized that a change was going on. And I started noting earthworms, which was very good. It's the ultimate indicator of soil fertility.
The earthworms were joined by termites, the soil was becoming richer, and over the following months, fields that once had been all but dead were alive with wildlife. And even more importantly, when a pest arose that threatened to eat his crops, one of its natural predators would appear to keep it under control. And after 12 years of experimentation, at last his project was a success.
The chain of life which has arose from this ecosystem has surprised even the most experienced ecologists. So we have surveyed here 335 species of superior vertebrates, which is more than half of what happens in the São Paulo natural parks.
And this has come entirely from just returning the trash to the soil each time you harvest. 20 tons of trash every harvest per hectare.
Yes, I learned it from the forest, from the master. It's so simple. I don't know how the researchers, they spend so much time in the laboratories while the forest is out there trying to teach us on how to conduct our crops, you know?
And what's more, in an area affected by droughts, the soil was holding four times more water than it used to and was five times more resistant to erosion. And the icing on the cake, he was producing 30% more sugar than the regional average.
Our soils changed so much, it's a structure in all aspects, that now they are pretty much like a forest soil. So it's very, very surprising.
Today, Leontino's farm produces almost a third of the world's organic sugar. And when you go to Rio, you can go into cafes and on the tables are little sachets of his sugar. And on the back are pictures of the animals that have come back into his fields. Wolves, otters, monkeys, wild birds, snakes, armadillos, even pumas.
Okay, let's pause the tape for a moment. Leontino Balbo has in Brazil achieved remarkable things, unprecedented environmental success on a vast scale. In the UK, millions of us eat his sugar daily. It's in sweetened organic products, including big brands such as Yo Valley Yogurt. But Leontino's story goes far beyond sugar. It raises some of the biggest questions about the future of our food supply. Leontino has achieved what many people thought was impossible, yet it's had little influence on the big global debate. Public, scientific and political attention has focused on technological fixes to give us the extra food we need. GM, precision farming, intensification. But if sugar can be produced on that scale by recreating nature's way, what about other more essential foods? Can we produce grains that way? Well, I asked an expert. Jeff Tansey is one of the UK's leading thinkers about food and our future and co-author of The Future Control of Food.
I think it's a really fascinating example of someone who's both taken time and given time to try something, because very often he talked about scientists came and looked for a relatively short time and in that short time didn't find what they expected or hoped for. But he had the sense to recognise that if you're changing something that's been wedded in one system, it may take time to shift it.
And what about the people at the cutting edge of bioscience research? What do they make of Leontino's story? Professor Maurice Maloney is currently the director of Rothamsted Research, where, amongst many other projects, they've been working on trials of GM wheat. Later this year, he's moving to Australia to run the Life Sciences Division of the Commonwealth Scientific and Industrial Research Organisation in Sydney. Maurice has his reservations about whether other farmers would be able to follow Leontino's lead.
It is based on empirical observation without a complete understanding as to what is going on. What that means is it may be a very particular set of circumstances that work in his geographical location, with his soil type, with the sugarcane genetics that he's currently using.
Maurice also thinks that with the global population set to reach 9 billion by the year 2050, Leontino spending almost 30 years developing a project is a luxury we can't afford.
Most of our scientific funding is for 3 or 5 year cycles of research. Now, Leontino, of course, has spent decades doing this. If I were to write any kind of grant application to any of the funding bodies in the UK for even a 20-year grant to do something, it would come back to me with a very clear statement that we want to break this down into at least 5-year portions, and then we'll see how things go. But There is a reason for it. It is because many of the problems that we have to deal with, and the population and food problem, is very time limited. And so we are looking for rapid solutions to problems. So to my mind, there is no question that technology is a critical part of it.
Jeff?
I think one of the great things that we need to do is exchange this knowledge that's being developed empirically around the world and interchange it with what is being researched, and in the process shift the research. I was in China recently, very different scale, very small farmers looking at how they replaced the fertilisers they were using in the rice and going back to a rice-duck cultivation. So you put the ducks in the field with the rice, you feed the ducks, they fertilise the field and they eat the bugs. And you sell the ducks as well, and they're making direct connections. There are a lot of these individual stories around the world, and I think one of the challenges for the scientists, perhaps, is to say, let's take seriously all of those and look at how that challenges us to rethink and engage with what they're finding.
Maurice?
As an experiment, I think it's very interesting. And bear in mind that in the history of all kinds of science, there have been outlier scientists who have come up with notions that the whole scientific community were very antagonistic towards for quite a long time, until eventually it became the orthodoxy.
It's a big debate. Meanwhile, Leontino is pressing on. He's working with neighbouring farmers, and he's now worked out a system where they see positive results within 18 months. Leontino believes he is slowly changing the world. His story matters because from sugar to wheat, corn to coffee, how the world's biggest food commodities are grown remains one of the most serious challenges, and one that demands radical thinking. Perhaps what the world needs is more Leontino Balbos. Let's go back now to Sao Paulo to hear the end of the story, back to David Baker on Leontino's farm.
As we take one last drive round his fields, I'm wondering how he could take things further than just these 16,000 hectares in Sao Paulo State. Leontino has certainly achieved a lot in the last 30 years, but he doesn't seem content to sit still. He wants his techniques to be used even on other crops in other countries. He's got plans, for example, for orange growers in Florida. But at the same time, he's beginning to realise his limitations.
It's a bit too much for me, you know, to do everything. Now I have to bring more people, you know. I need maybe another younger Leontino to help me with new ideas.
This year, Leontino has set up a technology transfer company to teach other farmers how to convert their land. But his goal is not making money. He already has plenty of money. It's more political than that.
Nobody stands anymore a corporation which headquarters is in German or Switzerland, telling him what to do, how to grow the crops, you know? So I intend to make the growers free, you know? It's a kind of slavery. It's a silent slavery. The growers have been submitted all around the world.
Whether he can achieve this is up for grabs, to be honest. The whole of organic farming is just 1% of world agriculture, and he's just a very small part of that. But here in the fields, you can tell something very special is happening.
It's amazing when we walk beside a revitalized field or our organic fields, the much diversity of sounds you hear from the birds singing. It's amazing. We see ducks there, we see hawks there, and we see small birds eating the insects. See? It's just about life.